Edutainment Learning is powered by Academica Virtual Education and Collegia TV. For more information, visit www.edutainmentlearning.com.
I'm Deborah Pepler. I'm a mother and a grandmother, first of all, and I'm a distinguished research professor at York University in Toronto, Canada, in the Department of Psychology. Specifically, I am in clinical developmental psychology, which studies what things go wrong in children's development and how we can support their healthy development. And I look at it both from a developmental perspective and understanding typical and atypical development, but also from a relational perspective, because children grow up in the context of relationships always, and their healthy development depends on healthy relationships.
That's lovely. Do you mind if we just jump right into some questions?
Yeah, for sure.
And guys, again, you guys on here, go ahead and message questions to me. I know I got some already. One of the students wanted to know, what inspired you to focus your research on bullying and aggression amongst young people? Like, people don't start out when they're young. This is what I want to do when I grow up. So what motivated you to pursue that?
No, I was the eldest child in my family, and I had three younger brothers, and they often rough and tumble played, but they also crossed this invisible line that moved into aggression. And I did, as a postdoctoral fellow, all my undergraduate, graduate work was on children's play. But as a postdoctoral fellow, I spent 6 years in living rooms watching siblings interact and watching the dyadic aggression start to unfold, especially as the younger child got older. And from there, I went to a children's mental health center that focused on children's aggression and how to deal with that. And it started primarily by focusing on the skills that the children hadn't developed and how to support their development, but very quickly started to include parents in the programming, because you can't do something magical with a child for an hour and a half every week and have that child go home and have all of the dynamics that pull for that aggression continue, because it'll just undo everything you did. So I was very aware of power over throughout my growing up, and bullying is really about power over and abusing that power. So I think that's what got me into it.
That's lovely. I mean, the fact that you pursued this, and we've talked to a number of bullying experts regarding this, and we just can't thank you enough for taking time out of your day to talk to us. One of the questions that I want to know is, what would you recommend to parents who have a student who is acting out in class, as far as, you know, picking on others or whatever it may be? What kind of approaches would you recommend for them?
Yeah. So I think, well, for one, you have to be cautious, because often the children of parents who the parents of children who bully often abuse power themselves. So what we learned in our longitudinal research, when we were looking at youth from fourth grade until they got to the end of high school, was that they had really strained relationships with their parents. And so there needs to be some work with the parents to support them in understanding what healthy relationships look like and how to create that for their children. But there are things you can do within the school context that really supports healthier development and healthier relationships for children. So it helps to go back and think about the essence of bullying, which is the abuse of power. And children who bully really want power. And what is power? It's being seen, it's being followed, it's being in a central position. And so maybe there are opportunities we can offer these children to help them experience positive power rather than the negative power that they've learned is so successful in getting attention. So, for example, I would encourage schools to have these children be reading buddies for kindergarten or grade one students, so that they could go and feel important, have a skill that they could share, be carefully monitored that they're not bullying the younger children, but be in a caring relationship and feel how satisfying that is. Some of the schools in our program that when we ran it collaboratively, used these children as conflict mediators. So the conflict mediators go out when there's a problem on the playground. They go and say, "Okay, what's the problem?" And they have this script that helps them undo, sort of help the children solve their problem. And what happens is for these children, it's the first time they've stepped out of a conflict and not been central to it. And so they are able to think about it in a different way because they themselves aren't embroiled in it, but are seeing the differences in points of view or how, how it can be solved. So there are ways of getting those children involved. I'd be particularly concerned for a child who is both bullying others and being victimized because we know these children are the most marginalized in the school and really need a lot of developmental, mental health, and relational support. So for those children, I'd be really cautious about the reputations that they have, how they're being understood and cared for in the classroom context, because if these children are really difficult to have in your classroom, but and so teachers tend not to like them because they're just they're destabilized, they're disruptive, they're aggressive, they're hard to have. And other kids learn very quickly that these kids aren't likable. And so if a teacher can't sort of rise above and be highly professional in his or her approach to these children and be nurturing in spite of the fact the child's really annoying, the other children will reject that child very quickly and not be collaborative and not be supportive of that child.
So what kind of strategies would you recommend for both teachers and students when you're talking about those marginalized students who are bullied at home and they themselves have teasing or bully behavior towards others? What kind of strategies would you recommend for schools and for parents to help rise above, like how you mentioned?
They're, these children are desperate to be seen and to receive attention. So maybe there are some little ways in which the teacher can build that child up. So every child has strengths. Every child has strengths. Maybe the child's especially good at drawing, especially good at computers, especially good at something. And if the other children can see the value of including that child, then that child will experience positive attention rather than the negative attention that they normally get. The other way I think about it has to do with the responsibility we have as adults to organize children's groupings and not let them unfold in the natural ways that they would. So I call this social architecture because what I can see on our playground tapes, we videotaped bullying on the play, we videotaped children's interactions on the playground and in the classroom and saw a lot of bullying and unpacked that. What you can see is the dynamics start to unfold quite quickly, and peers very quickly join in. So, in social architecture, it's a question of organizing children's groupings in a way that they wouldn't self-organize. So, if you say, "We're going to have a basketball game," and "Oh, John, you're really good at basketball, so are you, Mary, so why don't you pick your teams?" Then John and Mary are going to pick all the people they want on their teams, and these children are going to be the very last to be chosen because they're actively rejected. Kids actively don't want to interact with them. And so if the teacher organizes, the groupings in some kind of random way, it won't be so humiliating for these children. And it also can, the teachers, if they're sensitive to peer dynamics, it can help pull the children apart. And just to tell a little story, if I can, my thinking coalesced for this idea of social architecture when I went to my son's final year of and met his physics teacher. And the teacher said to us, "Your son is a pillar in my physics classroom." And I went, "Oh my goodness, you must have the wrong child. It's not my son who's a pillar in physics." He said, "No, he is." I have about seven or eight pillars in my classroom, and they're kids who do the homework. They pay attention. They do the lab work really well. They're just with me in the class. And he said, I watch the dynamics in the class, and I spread out the pillars and put them between the kids who are sparking off each other and really being difficult. And he said, and I change the seating plan every 2 or 3 weeks, but as I watch the dynamics in the classroom. And the kids come in, they go, oh, sir, I don't want to sit there. And he said, that's where you're going to sit. Please sit down. Let's start the lesson. And I thought, here is a brilliant man who understands peer dynamics and recognizes that he has both the responsibility and the opportunity to control those within his classroom. And then I think, oh, that's what we need to do with these children. We need to ensure that, they're not with other kids. The children who bully, their closest friends are children who bully, not surprisingly, because they're all at the margins of the social group or central, with other kids who highly reinforce them. So it's a question of not just looking at the individual. I think about binoculars. You look at the individual child and the strengths, there's challenges that that child faces. But then you look at like what's the relational context that that child in? Is the family able to support that child's emotional and behavioral regulation? Are the parents themselves regulated? If not, you need some help. What about the peers? Are they exacerbating the child's problem, or are they helping to calm that child down, which with coaching they can do?
That's interesting. Oh, there's a lot to unpack there. I think, you touched on classroom management. When I was a classroom teacher, I would always say the first couple of days, sit wherever you want, sit next to whoever you want. And then after like 2 days, then I would reassign seats and know exactly who to not sit them with. We have a question from France. This is Chloe. Chloe, you can unmute to ask your question.
Hello. I have a question. If it's not too personal, did you see bullying or violence in your school or in your children's school?
That's such a good question. The answer, of course, is yes. But we didn't, the term bullying wasn't really, didn't start to circulate till the late 70s. And I finished high school in 1969. So, yes, I distinctly remember a child who was both a boy who both bullied others and was victimized. But we didn't have names for it. And it wasn't a time in history when children had dedicated rights, when adults, were guided to constrain their anger towards children. So, yes, we had it, but and I think I responded to it. One of the days, this child who was in my grade six class, I remember walking home with him and talking to him because nobody associated with him because he was really nasty. And talking to him, later he was convicted of a horrible crime. And I think, oh my goodness, I wonder if I was at risk. But, we were in grade six, and I guess I was an empathic child. I thought of others and their feelings and their integration. So, I think that's helped me frame it. Like, not every child, of course, who bullies is heading on to a criminal career, but many of them are, because power over is part of crime. Hurting others is part of what crime is.
Yeah, I've seen some studies in graduate school about how they correlate between certain outcomes in adulthood being linked to behaviors as a child, and then it not being addressed as a kid, and then essentially it echoes into adulthood, and obviously the consequences get more severe because the infraction is more severe. So I think that's why I think this education is very, very paramount, not just for students, but also educators when it comes to professional development. That it goes beyond stuff you can measure in ELA and science and math and all that kind of stuff, where we have to start teaching to the heart of the student, the importance of kindness and empathy. So I have a few more questions, and we'll let you go because I know some of our kids. It's kind of late. Can you share with, first of all, so your website, prevnet.ca, is that where we can go to learn more?
Yes.
Okay, and we'll have that in the video and we'll share that out. What are some of the biggest myths about bullying that your research has helped disprove?
Well, one of them you've just alluded to, the kids just grow out of it. It's just being kids, and they'll grow out of it. What we know about children on a criminal pathway is there's 7 years of warning. So the average age in the United States for a boy to enter criminal justice systems is 14 and a half. And there's 7 years of warning before that, that this child's on a crash course. And we see that in our bullying data. So children who hurt others, who bully others in some way, are more likely to engage in sexual harassment as they move into high school. They're more likely to be physically aggressive with their dating partners. So the type of power over transforms across developmental stages. And it's a huge opportunity to intervene early and recognize that children want power and they want attention and they want to be seen and heard, and they can do that in positive or negative ways. And so our opportunity is to guide them in a positive rather than a negative way.
That's really good advice and really good observation. I want to see out of my own curiosity, you mentioned something very interesting about positive power, and I've never heard it coined that way, but it's pretty prevalent with me as far as our discussion. And you talked about some ways that teachers can take those students and have them work with younger students. Are there any other suggestions that you would have, like strategic ones that you've seen over your careers that maybe schools could try and implement with these students to try and undo that negative power?
Yeah, you could just think about there are many opportunities for student leadership, and these children want to be leaders. That's what this is. And so any opportunity you can find for them to be leaders, especially if they're going to be embedded into a group of positive peers, that they're going to be able to stand at the side, and the positive peers will naturally guide them. If they're on the student council, for example, there'll be good processes. And what's so interesting is thinking about peer dynamics and the fact that these children are pushed to the edges of the group because they're not fun to play with or be with or interact with. And they never get to see the modeling by the positive peers. So, they could be a conflict mediator. They could be on the student council as an observer. They could, help in the lunchroom. You can think of like little leadership opportunities where they can be monitored carefully by the caring adults in the school. And the other kids can understand that they too have a role in saying, why don't you just relax for a few minutes? We're going to get to that, that problem or that item or that solution in a minute. So I think recognizing that these children have a huge desire to be seen and to lead, and guiding them to lead in a more positive way.
That's great. That's wonderful advice. We'll go with two more questions. All right. So, how important is it for policymakers as well as schools when it comes to reducing bullying and violence?
This is a really good question, and I can answer it quite affirmatively because I was on the Safe Schools Action Team here in the province of Ontario in Canada, and we made up legislation to address bullying. And what I learned when I was in that process was that the first responsibility of teachers and principals in schools is to keep children safe. The second responsibility is to educate them. And so if we're going to provide exceptional learning opportunities for children, for all children, we need first to be sure they're safe, because they can't learn if they're not safe. And if they're being bullied or they're observing other people being bullied, they're not safe. So I think that we have to think about safety. And what does safety mean? It doesn't mean having, police officers or monitors in the school all the time. It means coming through the door and somebody knowing your name. It means coming after being absent and the teacher saying, how are you feeling now? I was so sorry that you were ill for the last 2 days. It means being seen, being a person who matters within the school context. And then if you have those kinds of relationships, children can tell you if they're not safe. But it's really about caring relationships and children knowing that the adults in the school and the other children care.
Caring and kindness, and that empathy and that, see something, say something. I think a lot of issues, at least what we have here in America, is the bystander effect, where it's not affecting me directly, even though I'm seeing this and I know that's wrong. And I can't stress that enough with these kids. Try and be kind to those around you. I'm sure you would agree to them with that, Deborah. What advice would you give to the students if they themselves are getting bullied, but feel afraid to step in? Or they see others getting bullied and they feel afraid to step in?
Well, there are things that young people do quite naturally that help out. One is just taking that person who's being victimized away. If you see that that's happening, say, let's go over here. I see some things over there that are really just get the child out of the situation. It's hard. It takes a very high status child to intervene in bullying. So there's some other things you can do behind the scenes, such as later say, I really felt badly that that was happening. Maybe we should go and tell the teacher because often the adults don't know. Children know and intervene in bullying much more frequently than teachers. So, and if you're being bullied yourself, talk to your parents about it. And then I always encourage parents to go and talk to their teachers. And, it would be great if, as a quote unquote expert on bullying, none of my children were bullied, but they all were. And I can remember talking to my son when he was in grade five and, telling him every night we talked about the bad things that happened and I would give him solutions. And he said, Mom, you think you're an expert on bullying, but really none of this is helping. And I said, oh, I've got to do what I tell every parent to do. I have to go and talk to the teacher. And he said, oh, please don't do that. It'll just get worse. So I went and talked to the teacher. She was horrified. She had no idea this had happened. And my son came back that day and he said, thanks a lot. The kids called me such a suck because my mother came to the school. So I went right back to the school and talked to the teacher again. And that evening, the teacher called the parents of every single boy who had been bullying my son, and it stopped because she made it very clear that this would not be accepted. It was not acceptable. So I think letting the adults know because they have the power to intervene and the responsibility to intervene.
I think it's everybody's responsibility to help create safe schools, not just for themselves, but everyone around them. So our final question, I always ask this of all of our guests, what kind of advice, Dr. Deborah Pepler, would you have for these kids around the world who are listening live and then also after the fact? What advice would you have for them as they go off into the world in the next chapter of their lives and the kind of individuals they want to become?
I would have the advice to ensure that you are in and creating healthy relationships. So, what's a healthy relationship? I was challenged to think about this, and I've done a TED talk on this if you're interested. So, they're relationships that are safe, in which you feel valued, in which you are supported to learn and do the things that you want to learn and do, that help you buffer stress, because there's everyday stress that we all experience, and those relationships should help you buffer that. And they don't cause stress. So if a relationship is causing a lot of stress for you, it's not a healthy relationship. And if it's not a healthy relationship, it's impacting every aspect of your own development and those around you.
Wonderful. Well said. And guys, if you want to learn more, go to prevnet.ca and we'll have that link there. And we'll also link out your TED talk as well. And we can't thank you enough for taking the time
Great.
to talk to us. Guys, before we end the meeting for all, before I shut it down, can we all unmute and say thank you to Deborah for taking the time out of her day to talk to us? Thank you so much.
Great.
Thank
Thank
you.
you. All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.